All right. Welcome, everyone, to our bonus Q&A call group coaching session for B2B Business Launcher. And this is a bonus call that we're doing because some of you had trouble dialing in due to a technical glitch last Thursday. So as I mentioned in the email, first of all, I wanted to apologize for that. We didn't uncover a solution until after the call was over, and I know how frustrating that could be if you're trying to get on. I've been on that side of things, and it's not fun. So thank you for bearing with us, and hopefully, you know, I can make it up to you today. And if you are having trouble, I'm happy to answer any questions, talk through any issues or scenarios that you may be considering right now. So I'm here at your disposal. Now, of course, I have no idea who exactly was impacted, so we're not, you know, we're just going by the honor system. But what we're trying to do is I want to make sure that I take care of those who had trouble getting in the last call. And if there's some time afterwards, you know, any of you could, of course, jump in if you have any questions, comments, or need some feedback. So I'll just go by, again, honor system. Just let me know if you'd like to ask a question. Now, just a reminder, and for those of you who weren't on Thursday, *2 raises your hand. I'll see that on the dashboard, and then I'll go ahead and unmute you. So everyone coming into the call is muted automatically. There's nothing you need to do on your end. Don't worry, I can't hear your dog barking. You might hear mine, you're already muted. I'll go ahead and call out. Usually I have a city, state, and an area code, and I can at least do that. Sometimes I have a name as well, and I'll just call you. So again, *2 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. And let's see, we had a couple that were pre-submitted, so while I'm waiting for raise hands, let me go ahead and address those. All right, the first question is from D'Angelo. He says, "Hi, Ed. I've gotten some great feedback from my network regarding my unique capabilities, but some of it has been a bit broad and unspecific, which makes it that much harder to match it to a client benefit. What is a good method for translating big qualities like a natural-born leader, diplomatic, cerebral, diligent, and so on into mouth-watering benefits for prospective clients?" Yes, great question. So let me put that exercise in perspective. Here's what I'm trying to do with everything that I gave you in session one in terms of homework. I like to think of it as the cooking metaphor. And you know, what we're trying to do is somebody has asked you to cook this meal and you are unprepared, you don't have time to go grocery shopping. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to see what you have available so you can come up with the best possible meal for this group. And what we're doing here is we're trying to get everything out of the pantry, everything out of the refrigerator, everything out of the freezer, and putting it on the kitchen counter, and then just seeing what you have to work with. Now, you're taking that broad view of the situation. You have out of all your talents, skills, experiences, et cetera. We're not looking at each one of them individually and asking, how could this work on its own? So we're not looking at the chili powder and saying, what could I make from this? Instead, you're looking at the whole picture holistically and say, okay, I see chili powder, I see some salt, I see some oregano, you know, and you're trying to think through different combinations. So where I'm going with that, D'Angelo, is that that the results from that questionnaire, from that email you sent out to your network, is really just another set of ingredients that you can use in making that decision. Now, I will tell you that in most cases, what you got from your group, that's great feedback, and it's very common to get feedback that you can't directly apply. However, my experience has been that many times you have to read between the lines, number one. And number two, this is feedback that will start kind of gelling and making sense over time. So don't expect, you know, kind of a miracle, wow, you know, a big aha moment I get it now. This is how I should position myself. And instead, look at it as something that's, this is great feedback, and I'm glad I have this. This maybe reinforces some of the things that I thought. It adds some color or detail to some of the other things that I suspected or haven't really given much thought to. I'm just going to kind of keep it here and revisit it and just trust that eventually that will make sense. So bottom line, D'Angelo, is it's more, in most cases, it's not an area that's going to give you your big aha moment. It's just one of those ingredients that will eventually just kind of make sense in this exercise of trying to figure out what meal you're going to prepare. So anyway, great question, and what you found is not unusual. Hopefully it was helpful, though, in helping you maybe think through this a little bit, and if it hasn't yet, don't worry, it will. All right, so second question that came in a couple of days ago from Andre, who said he can't be here today. Okay. He says, question number one, when a prospect mentions that he or she would hire me for an urgent project, how do I drill down to understand the real problem behind the urgent label? And question number two, I just want to make sure they weren't related. So let's address them. They're not. Question number one, when a prospect mentions that they would like to hire you for an urgent project, how do you drill down to understand the real problem behind the urgent label? Well, I'm assuming that you're trying to figure out, okay, why is it, how do I find out what's making it urgent and make sure that I don't start jumping through hoops before I truly assess the situation? What I like to do is I like to ask follow-up questions, usually something to the effect of, you know, what's driving the urgency? And many times that just comes out in the conversation. And we're going to talk about this in a future session. But it's very, very important that you get that prospect on the phone. You know, many of these conversations start over email. But the tendency for a lot of people is to keep it in email. And I'm going to ask you to get out of your comfort zone. I'm going to give you some tools and questions. I'm going to arm you with what you need to get these folks on the phone and to be able to lead that discussion like an expert. But without that conversation, it's really hard to have some meaningful dialogue. So in that conversation, you can ask questions. If it hasn't come out yet, you know what's driving the urgency. Okay. And especially if what they're asking for in terms of timing, it's almost impossible. For instance, I had someone contact me one time, and it was a prospect. I hadn't done work for them before. They wanted 4 white papers written in a week, different topics. And I knew that if they really understood what's involved in doing a really good job with 4 white papers, there's just no way they would even ask for that. So I drilled down to find out what's driving it. What are you trying to do? What types of white papers? What are the topics? And it was by asking those follow-up questions, I quickly realized that their expectations were out of whack in terms of what these white papers could do for them, number one. Number two, if I remember correctly, because this is a few years ago, the other problem was that these weren't really white papers. These were like 2 or 3 page documents. They're not thorough enough to really build a business case for something. So they were looking for something different, and that's okay, because in that case, these are not pieces that need to be research for hours and hours, and you know, that take the time and attention and detail that a regular white paper would take. But even then, I just felt that it wasn't going to be a good fit for me because of the timing, and I was also worried about their expectations in other areas. So but had everything else checked out, I would have realized, well, wait a minute, now that I see what they're looking for, this is something maybe I can do, you know. So you need to dig a little bit deeper and find out what's driving it, and let's talk a little bit more about what you're looking for. What are you looking to accomplish? What kind of piece do you need? Length, audience, et cetera, just so you could better understand, okay, is this even feasible? All right, so Andre's second question. As a new copywriter, how do I evaluate a project for time required? What kind of margin do I build in for time so I don't miss a deadline? Okay, with that, there's not a published list, for instance, of, okay, well, if it's a case study, you need, you know, between 10 and 20 hours. If it's an article, you need between this and that. That will come with a little bit of time and experience. However, what you can do is at least look at it. And first of all, I would not make decisions while you're on the phone with somebody. So if you're not really sure if you can make it work, let them know that you need to think through this a little bit. You got to see if you can make it work from a scheduling standpoint, and you're going to get back to them, you know, by the end of business day, for instance. So don't make a decision on the fly, especially if you know it's going to be tight. And then the second thing I would do is once I hang up, I would start looking at the project and figure out just roughly, all right, well, what's my best guess? I mean, let's just say it's a white paper. You know, they're providing me with some background information. They already gave me some samples of what they have in terms of background materials. I'm going to have to do some research and then just come up with an estimate. Do it on a spreadsheet if you need to. All right, so let's say my own research is going to be, let's say, 6 hours. And then just pouring through all the materials is going to be another, you know, 4 hours. So now we're up to 10. And do it that way. You know, just kind of deconstruct the project into the different steps and then just take your best guess. And I will tell you that in most cases, you're probably going to underestimate. So just be mindful of that. And then over time, you're going to have a really good idea. The other thing you're going to want to do, obviously, is once you start working on these projects, if you're new, Andre, like in your case, track your time. I used to track it not just by project but by type of project. So that way, after 4 white papers, I had a pretty good idea of what, you know, a problem solution white paper was taking me. And at first, it was kind of all over the place, but at least I had a range, you know. So start tracking your time, and then that way it's no longer a theoretical guess. Now you have some experience as to what how long it takes. And then keep in mind that at first it's going to take you longer. You know, as you're learning, it's going to take you longer. My first case study took me something like, you know, close to 30 hours. And then I eventually was writing these pieces beginning to end, from just engaging with the client all the way to finished piece, no longer than 7 hours or so. So it just, you know, you develop a process and you get much more efficient at it. But at first, if you're not sure, just take your best guess. And of course, while we're working here over the next 4 months, Andre, if you have a situation like that and you're trying to, you know, get a better guess, you know, either in a call or in the forum, just let me know, ping me there, tag me, and give me some of the specifics, and I can maybe guide you through it and give you some direction as to how I would estimate the time it's going to take you. All right, so star 2, guys, star 2 on your telephone keypad will raise your hand, and I'll see that you have a question, and I'll go ahead and get to you. So we're giving priority to those who couldn't dial in on Thursday, but everyone is welcome to ask away. And we have a caller out of, this is an Erie, Pennsylvania number, 814 area code. You're on.
Hi, Ed. It's Wes Kimple.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. So, yeah, I'm originally from Western Pennsylvania, but I'm living in Austin, Texas now. One of those weird people that decided to keep their old phone number, at least for the time being, but...
You're actually, I would say, you're in the majority. Almost everyone I know that has moved around has just kept their original number.
Cool. So,
welcome.
As
great
I
to have you here. Yeah,
thank you. So as I was working through the week one material on positioning, we were asked about the type of work that we enjoy doing the most, and that kind of got me to thinking about the first client that I've been working with over the past 3 years. One of the things that I haven't been able to do with this particular client is during the research process for me, I'm desperately trying to find, you know, one or two people that I could interview as subject matter experts as I'm going through my research process. I wanted to ask, is it common for any type of a project, whether we're talking a blog post, obviously with white papers you need to, but you know, I'm very comfortable talking to people, interviewing people, and then being able to take that information and incorporate it into my project. And you know, my question was, is this something that I could try to request from all of my clients, or are some clients very hesitant when it comes to allowing you to talk with other people, whether it's, you know, in-house employees or, you know, other people that might be related to their organization, as I'm trying to come up with my ideal client and the type of projects that I enjoy working on the most?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and here's what I've found. It's you're going to find all kinds of variety out there.
Okay.
And it really depends on, well, first of all, everything else being equal, a contact in your client's organization who's ready and willing to put you in touch with people inside the company, that's a really good sign. Somebody who's not, mm-hmm. again, everything else being equal, is not a great sign. And it's not mm-hmm. that they don't want you to succeed. I say it's not a good sign for a number of reasons. And one of them could be because they don't have very much leverage in the organization.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't, you know, they don't understand that how important that is. Or maybe that just means that they know the importance of tried, but they can't get people to, which speaks of the leverage, to take your call. You know, so generally speaking, that's not a great thing. When I work with someone who says, Ed, you just tell me who you need to speak with, you know, I will make it happen. That's kind of the extreme case.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly the most common scenario is going to say, I got a couple of people who I think you should speak with. Once we get there, I will definitely arrange for a phone call with them.
Okay.
Thought it through, and you know they're ready to go.
With all other respects, I mean, this is a great client. They pay on time. They pay me really, really well. It's just one of those lessons learned that I never really thought about before. You know, I really enjoy interviewing people, and it really makes my research process that much easier if I am able to do it. So it just gave me another talking point, so to speak, when I do engage in a prospective client in the future. Just you know, hey, during my research process, you know, I really enjoy interviewing people to help me out. Is that something that we could discuss at the appropriate point? So.
Yeah, and I would position it not as much as I really enjoy, but I have found that, you know, in many cases the project will benefit, you know, from
gotcha. Okay.
That way it's not about okay. you, it's about, hey, we can create a better quality product.
Good. All right, appreciate the time, Ed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and, you know, unfortunately, there's no way to know that until you talk to them or you have a mm-hmm. dialogue. But you're right. It can become kind of one of those items that will either trigger a red flag or maybe signal that this would be a great client. Or, you know, you got to take it into account at some point, and it's not going to give you the full answer, but it's just an indicator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good.
So. All right. Good stuff. And, you know, one of the things we'll address, too, in a future session will be how to lead that first conversation. So we're going to talk in detail about that. All right. Let's see. We got Bill out in New York. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Good, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well.
Just a quick question, and this is kind of probably piggybacking on the question Wes just had. If you're working on a project, let's say it's a business plan or a case study or a white paper that demands a lot of research and demands that you talk to multiple people in multiple disciplines within the company, R&D, HR, you know, finance, sales, and marketing, do you think for that type of extended research, it's better to ask to speak verbally to each person involved or to develop a questionnaire that you can send to them and they can answer at their convenience?
Yeah, great question. I always prefer to talk to them.
Okay.
However, I will take the lead from my contact. So I will just ask them, hey, so typically I found that it's best to have a conversation, but, you know, I will take your lead on this. If there are some folks who we may have to do this a little differently, you know, I'm open to that as well. And just find this. So that way you're showing that you are flexible, that you're willing to work in different ways. But as you know, right, it's a questionnaire is limited because you can't ask follow-up questions.
Right.
So, and I've also found that some people, it's best to give them a questionnaire to let them know, hey, this is what I'm like to ask you. So that way they can start thinking through that. And then when we have the conversation, they're better prepared. In fact, that's actually a good thing to do with just about everybody. And but as long as you let them know, because if you don't make sure they understand, hey, I'm not sending this for you to fill out. I'm just giving you a list of questions that I'd like to go through, just so you know where I'd like to go with this.
Great. Now that makes a lot of sense because the type of work that I'm considering is something that would involve that type of research, that would involve input across the entire organization. And I'm just wondering whether a company would allow you that type of access. You know, if you're, because the kind of work I'm considering is to do kind of business plans, strategic plans for small manufacturing companies. Would those companies allow you to talk to the sales VP? Would they allow you to talk to the CFO? Would they allow you to talk to, you know, all these different disciplines in order to put that information together? Or, you know, so that's the kind of thing I was thinking about when you were answering Wes's question. But I appreciate your background and your answer. I do agree that having a questionnaire ready, whether you send it to them beforehand or afterwards, you know, to send it to them before certainly prepares them for the type of questions you're going to ask.
Yeah, and you know, so let me clarify something because it actually leads to something I was going to tell you about as well. I was going to remind you. So I think after you left the call on Thursday, Michael, who's also from New York, by the way, had a recommendation for you, and I jotted down, I was just looking here in my notebook, kind of the timestamp of when he talked about it. So if you go back to the replay at about an hour and 24 minutes into the call, he had some advice for you just on positioning. And
great.
So I would check that out because it was some really good stuff. But so that leads to something I would suggest is if you're going to do that kind of work, the more strategic you position yourself as being, the more important it is for you to approach it from a position of strength. So I would go into the deal saying, here's how I work. It is critical for me to be able to speak to these key members of the organization. If I can't do that, I can't help you. However you want to say that, I mean, that's really the message you want to convey in a professional way. But it needs to come, I mean, you need to be confident about it, but you need to be upfront and say, look, here's what I'm going to give you, and I can't do that in a vacuum. I need to be able to have a conversation with the following individuals. You know, and if that can't happen, then I can't give you my best work.
Right. Right. Exactly. Now, I haven't had a chance to go back and listen to the end of the call after I had dropped off, but I appreciate you telling me that. And Michael, if you're on the call, thank you for that recommendation. I'm going to go back this evening and listen to that in more detail. But thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate your input and the detail which you answered the question. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. My pleasure. And guys, so here's the thing. So the higher in the organization you're getting in, or the more strategic the project you're working on, then the more important it is that you have some requirements and standards. Now, I wouldn't worry about this right now for most of you. This is just, you know, for you to think about long term. As you're starting out, excuse me, many of you are going to start out very tactically. You know, you're just trying to get this piece written. You're trying to get in the door through a very tactical project. And that's okay. But if you decide to position yourself as a more of a trusted advisor, more of a consultant, not just a writer, even if you're still a writer or copywriter, that's fine. But if you want to elevate yourself, then it is important that as you grow to that place, that you have certain requirements, that you don't just say yes to everything and to everybody, you know, and that's going to come with time. But I just wanted to let you guys know that's going to be important. I see too many freelancers out there who don't grow, whether we're talking about in terms of client quality or fees or income, because they still approach their work from an employee mentality. And the employee mentality is, tell me what you need done and I'll do it. Tell me what you need done and by when and I will do it. And even if they're put in really, really difficult situations, they still take it. And when you're self-employed, you know, you should always have a certain set of standards, and it shouldn't just be about being a yes man. You know, you should go and honor those standards and make sure that your clients honor them. And again, that comes with time. I mean, you can't approach your business from day one necessarily that way, but as you grow, it's something to be mindful of. And not suggesting that anyone here, you know, has any problems with that. You guys are a great group of professionals. I just wanted to let you know, because, you know, this question, it is an important one. All right, so star two, if you have a question, you want to talk through an issue, anything's fair game, guys. And by the way, as we get moving and you start talking with prospects as we're working over the next 4 months and you have a situation, you're always welcome to ask me in the forum, and of course in these calls as well. It's just these calls are not, they don't happen as frequently, so the forum is a great place to ask away if, you know, you need some feedback on pricing or what have you. So we got an open floor right now if anyone's been holding off. All right. I think this is Michael out of New York. Hey, Michael.
Hello. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Can you hear me? I got a
yep.
bit of an echo here. On my very expensive phone that I think was probably a mistake. But anyway, this is kind of unrelated to what we're talking about before. But what's your take on general business organization, like sole proprietorship versus LLC versus like an S corporation?
Yeah. So I always have to preface it by saying, look, I'm not an attorney. I don't even play one on the internet or an accountant. So you definitely check with your – I would check with your accountant first, but I'll just tell you what mine told me, which I thought made perfect sense. Now, I live in Georgia, so that's the other reason why you have to take states into account and so forth. He told me, look, when you get to about the $75,000 income level, come to me and then we'll look at it again. But for now, just start out as a sole proprietor. So I did.
Is it more of a matter of tax consideration?
For him, it was more of a tax issue. because of the in most of the scenarios, the costs associated with not just registering, but you know, paperwork and so forth, would just you weren't going to offset it for, you know, if you were making $40,000 a year.
So yeah, well that makes sense. Do you think that a liability is really an issue for people like us? You know, like corporate liability, that kind of thing. I know you're not a lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer. Yeah, I haven't seen or heard of an issue where some, you know, copywriter or writer has gotten sued. But where it does come into play is many of the bigger companies want all their freelancers, and this is kind of a boilerplate thing that doesn't really make sense, but they just apply it to everybody. They want them to have liability insurance. Liability and professional liability, that is. So, but that has nothing to do with, you know, your LLC or what have you. They just want to see that.
Wasn't it your podcast where you talked to somebody about this whole insurance thing, or is it somebody else I'm thinking of?
Yeah, that was me. Man, that was a crazy popular show. A lot of people are searching for that apparently online.
It was a female guest. That's all I remember. I can't remember her name or anything else. But was it a woman, or am I thinking about somebody else?
No, it was a guy.
That's right. I listen to so many things. I can't remember where I read stuff, and I can't remember where I hear stuff anymore.
I do that with my own stuff. Wait a minute. Did I interview somebody on this? Episode 24.
No.
So b2blauncher.com/episode24.
I think I've
check that out. He really breaks it down, makes it easy to understand. And there's a couple companies out there that do this now. They've automated everything. So you just basically fill out an application form online, and based on these factors, and they can quote you. They're a broker. They can quote you different options.
But it sounds like the bottom line is it's something I can put off till next year, which is kind of what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, here's my fear. My fear with the whole corporate structure and liability and all those things, it falls into the category of I got to do this before I start prospecting. And I find that a lot of people are extremely prepared when it comes to their website, their logo, their S-Corp and everything, but they haven't even knocked on any doors yet. Like, I have no clients. So that list can always keep growing is my concern. So I would definitely check with a professional. But everything else being equal, it's best to, you know, once it's so much easier to talk about these things to someone once you have some activity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm not really. This is not something I want to be bothered with anyway. So that's good. That's good news to me. So sounds good.
Yeah, good.
Last thing I need is more things to do.
Yeah, right. Oh, before you do anything, you got to go to the Capitol and fill out this paperwork. It's got to be done there in person.
Yeah. All righty. Yeah, the little I've looked into it, forming an LLC in New York apparently is more complicated and expensive than forming a corporation, I think, because they got this ridiculous publication requirement. They had to actually publish ads in two different newspapers, real newspapers, that nobody reads anyway. And I think it's a lot simpler just to form a corporation. You file some papers and that's it. I don't know why they just don't publish everything on the website and call it the publication, but, you know, far be it for me to question how they do things in New York. I'm just a humble Midwestern guy living on the East Coast. So.
Well,
I say to people, I'm not a New Yorker.
New York and some of the northeastern states seem to really make things overly complicated for some reason.
Yeah.
They love their regulations there.
Yeah, they do. All right. So
Massachusetts, I think, is probably one of the worst.
All right. So that's my question for now. And I've already forgotten his name. Bill, I want to say, if he wants to get in touch with me, we'll figure something out if he wants to talk further or whatever. So,
awesome.
That's all I got right now.
All right, Michael.
All right, thank you.
Good stuff. All right, so again, star 2, guys, if you have a question, want to join the conversation, just checking here on the webcast, make sure nobody had typed in something. Nope, nothing there. So while I'm waiting, just kind of a look ahead. You know, again, we're gonna be releasing the website session here this week. Then we're going to have 2 weeks of implementation time. So I just want everyone to know this is the first place where I see people get bogged down and then behind. So just if you can preempt that, if you can know that ahead of time, I think it really, really helps. I would jump on that material as quickly as possible. I will tell you right now that most of you won't feel like you're ready to make a decision on your final positioning, and you're going to let it marinate a little bit too long. So when in doubt, if you're not sure, just know that that's actually very normal. Remember that you're going to iterate several times over the next few months. So my advice is go with your gut. Go with the one that you feel might be the best option, even if it doesn't feel 100% right. And just go with that. It's better to go ahead and write your copy based on that decision. Go ahead and get your website up and live, or edit your current website if you already have one, and have that ready to go than it is to keep waiting until you feel 100% there. Let me give you a hint. You'll never feel 100% there. I've seen this over and over and over again. Nobody ever feels 100% at this point. I went through 4 or 5 iterations of my website over the first couple of years. So it's going to happen. Don't worry about it. Just good enough is good enough. And I will post some instructions on how you can get me to look at your website copy, and I'll give you about a 10-minute video review, and we'll post that here this week. But even then, don't let that slow you down. Just go with what feels right. You can always edit. You can always refine, and you will. You will continue to refine this over time. All right, guys, last call. I'm in no hurry, but I haven't seen any questions, so I just want to make sure I don't miss anybody. And if you have a question, star two on your telephone keypad. All right. Well, I don't see any other questions, guys, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Again, thanks for your patience. Thanks for being here today. I hope I was able to take care of those of you who weren't able to dial in. We figured out what happened. I don't think this will happen again. At least I hope not. But it was great to jump on the phone with you guys again today. And again, be on the lookout for some more material coming out tomorrow. And I'll see you all in the forum. We'll talk soon. Take care.